Hi, Steve Pomerantz here, host of On the Money with today's On the Money Extra, where we feature market updates and insights as well as guest interviews with noted financial experts to help you stay informed and learn the facts to make the right decisions about money. So let's get started. You may have heard that due to a cash-strapped IRS, audit rates are at their lowest level in a decade. In fact, more than 99% of individual income tax returns skate safely past the IRS audit machine. But what are the odds that the IRS will audit your return? And what should you do if it does? So I've asked Kevin McCormally from Kiplinger Magazine to join me today. He's a reporter specializing in taxes, which makes him uniquely suited to answer some of these questions. So, hey, Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hey, I'm happy to be here.
So I understand that Kiplinger actually has a what's your risk of a tax audit calculator to pinpoint your odds. Tell us about that.
What we did is, you know, the IRS puts out enormous mountains of statistics every year. And one of them is, you know, it's about who gets audited, and they break it down by income level, basically, and what kinds of extra forms you send in with your return. So we just took that data, put it into a calculator, made it easy for people. We asked them what their AGI is, their adjusted gross income. We asked them whether or not they have a business return with their tax return, because if they do, that increases their odds. And then you poke a button and we say, well, your ads are 1 in 250. You know, the average this year is 1 in 116. That's less than 1%. 1 in 116 is the average overall. People who put a business return in, it's higher than that. People who don't have a business return or rental real estate or employee business expenses, it's only a 1 in 300 chance.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not really just a chance, because the IRS doesn't just pluck out every 300th return. They're a little more sophisticated than that.
Well, are they looking at individuals that make a lot of money? Is that one of the characteristics, or will they go after those who don't make so much?
Well, they will do both. And again, it's like going after Willie Sutton, robbing banks. You know, they want to go where the money is. So
Right. Sure,
the higher your income is, the more likely they're going to look at you, because the more likely they're going to collect enough money to make it worth their while.
Yeah.
But on the other end of the extreme, the earned income credit, which goes to low-income people, is one of the ripest areas for fraud on the tax returns. They know this. And so a lot of very low-income people get audited. There are a lot of dishonest tax preparers out there who claim this credit for people, take half of themselves for filling out the return, and it's hard for the IRS to catch it. So that's why they have to do an audit. So it goes across the board. You know, think about it. Who would you look at if you were trying to figure out who to audit? You'd look at people who have an opportunity to maybe, you know, cheat a little bit.
Fudge some things. Yeah.
I don't. You know, I work for Mr. Kiplinger. He gives me a W-2 form,
mm-hmm.
and it says exactly what I made, and he sends a copy to the IRS.
Yeah.
My bank that I pay my mortgage to sends a copy to the IRS. They know exactly how much mortgage interest I paid. I can't say I paid $20,000 if I only paid $14,000.
Right.
But self-employed people, independent contractors, musicians, you know, mm-hmm. there's more opportunity there. People who are in cash businesses, that's who the IRS is going to be looking at.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. My guest is Kevin McCormally with Kiplinger Magazine, and he's specialist reporting in taxes, so that's why we're asking him these questions today. But to find out more about Kevin and to hear this interview again, join the conversation at onthemoneyradio.org. Kevin, there's an article online at Kiplinger, 15 reasons you might get audited. Let's take a few of these reasons. I think we mentioned some of them already. Number one, making a lot of money.
That's right. Again, just because it's there, and that's where the opportunity is going to be, because higher income people usually have higher deductions, too.
Sure.
So it just goes hand in hand. But, you know, the IRS is not going to come out and want to look at your entire return. People misunderstand about audits. If you're going to be audited, you're going to get a letter from the IRS saying, I want to look at your rental loss deductions. That's one of the red flags for an audit, because, again, that's an area, you know, really iffy. Is something deductible? If you live in the house, is it a rental property,
mm-hmm.
or is it a vacation home that you rent occasionally? All sorts of complicated rules, easy to make a mistake or to fudge. And so that's one of the ones. But the IRS is going to say, this is what we want to look at. Very rarely do they say we want to look at everything. They're going to tell you what they want to know. And then you're going to have to figure out if you've got that. You know, one thing we say is if you are audited, audit yourself first. What are they looking for? Where are the holes in your records? And if there's a hole in your record, you know, own up to it. See if you can fill it. See if you can get a copy of that receipt or whatever you need.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you just made a mistake, you know, go and say, gee, I thought this was deductible, but I see that I used the house too much myself, and I guess I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll fine you. They might hit you with a negligence penalty. Maybe not. They'll charge interest, but audit yourself first.
You know, I operated my own business for quite a number of years. And before I did that, I never got contacted by the IRS. But once I started my own business, then they were writing me letters all the time. Now, the first five letters, I would really start to tremble a little bit, like, what did I do? But then I got used to it. And what I found basically was if they had a question or something like that, we would answer the question and that was it. We'd be done with it. Or sometimes even if we goofed, we said, hey, this was an oversight. This was a first-time offense. This is not a pattern. They would forgive it for the first time. So it wasn't really as onerous as I had been led to believe. Let's get with some more of these things. Failing to report all taxable income. All right, well, so that's basically it.
And where they catch you there is because somebody else reported it to them. You know?
That's right.
If you're doing jobs for somebody, they send a 1099, and they're required by law to do that if they pay you over $600. You know, the IRS is going to have that. And there was an interesting piece in the Washington Post just this week. One of their personal finance columnists got one of these letters and said, you failed to report $25,000 in income.
Mm.
And she opened it up and said, my God, you know, I didn't make any money. And she tracked it down, and somebody she had done some work for that she had reported accidentally sent another 1099 to the IRS with her Social Security number on it that was meant for a different taxpayer. And as soon as she was able to show that, they said no harm, no foul, and dropped it.
Okay. So running a small business, as I just mentioned, is one reason. Here's one, taking large charitable deductions.
Well, again, what that means is, you know, be reasonable. If you report $100,000 in income and report that you gave $40,000 of it away to your church, they're going to say, boy, that's kind of high, 40%.
Yeah.
And that's what they're going to ask you about, something that seems out of kilter. You know, what the computer does, and you know, right now the IRS is feeding the information from 140 million individual tax returns into a computer in West Virginia. And that computer starts looking at each one of these pictures that's painted. And if the picture you paint of yourself is way off from the picture of other people with similar incomes in a similar state, you know, that's when the computer goes all a Twitter and maybe a human being's going to look at it. Really high charitable contributions. I mean, the government wants us all to be generous toward our fellow man, but, you know, they get a little suspicious sometimes.
So I wonder if Warren Buffett, who's giving away, like, whatever, 90% of his $65 billion fortune, I wonder if they're going, now, hey, wait a minute, this guy doesn't really make any money. I think he takes a $100,000 salary, you know.
And, you know, of course, he can't deduct it then because he, you know, you can only deduct up to 50% of the income that you report.
Well, there you go.
So, you know, but he's giving it away to dodge the estate tax. You know, he's a guy who really thinks the estate tax ought to apply to everybody. But then at the same time, he's going to avoid it completely by giving all his money away.
Yes.
Good for him.
Yes. And good for you for bringing it to our attention. Taking an alimony deduction. I mean, I think that would be kind of basic, right?
It is, unless it's a different amount than your ex-spouse reports as
income. Well, that's it. I mean, your ex-spouse...
I mean, that's what happens when it's a mismatch. This is another opportunity for a mismatch, and they're going to say,
okay,
let's take a look at this.
All right. Writing off a loss for a hobby activity.
You know, this is a tough one because I'm a photographer as a hobby. And if I started trying to sell my pictures and suddenly started deducting, you know, $10,000 a year for my cameras and my software that I... but only reporting, you know, $3,000 of income, you know, they're going to get suspicious because that, they'd say that's a hobby, Kevin. In order for you to have a business, you have to truly try to make a profit. And in fact, you got to make a profit at least 2 years out of seven.
Yeah.
Well, we're not going to believe you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's it. They look at things like photography, flower arrangement. Horse racing is the big one, you know. A lot of people write off the cost of their horses, and it's a hobby. They're not really trying to make a living of racing their horses. So the IRS says that's a hobby. It's not a real business, so you don't get real business deductions.
Yeah, so let's say that you have a business. Maybe you sell a few books. Maybe you provide some service. It's not a hobby. You're maybe not doing it full time, but you are bringing in some income. But then you go on a trip, and maybe you have a dinner or a lunch to meet with a business prospect, and you want to deduct that. Well, you know, what is the IRS going to say about that?
Well, you got to remember there's only one reason that the IRS lets you deduct business expenses, because you're trying to earn income for them to tax. That's the only reason Congress says this is okay, to write off that business lunch or that trip or those expenses, because they hope in the end that there's going to be more income for them to tax. Okay. And if year after year goes by and you keep showing loss after loss after loss, they're going to think it's a hobby. Now, you can prove otherwise. You can go in, if you show that you're conducting in a business-like manner and you've got business cards and you know, really are going to seminars to learn how to increase your client base and things like that, you can still win that, and you might be an unlucky businessman as well as an unprofitable.
Oh, I see. So,
but their concern is if, you know, you're really just sort of playing around the edges of this and using it. Mm-hmm. You know, you go to Hawaii to look for clients, you know, well, wait a minute, maybe you went to Hawaii for some other reason.
Yeah, got your point. Unfortunately, we're out of time. My guest, Kevin McCormally with Kiplinger Magazine, and we're discussing what the odds are for you to get audited, and if you do, what they're looking for, what are your risks, and then perhaps maybe some of the things that you should do. Thank you so much for joining us, Kevin.
Thank you.
You're listening to On the Money with certified financial planner Steve Pomerantz. If you'd like information about guests, topics, or anything you hear on this program, call 866-MONEY01 or visit the show's website at onthemoneyradio.org.